Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. A state of emergency in El Paso, Texas, as a massive wave of migrants are arriving at the border in droves. El Paso Deputy City Manager Mario D'Agostino.
We want to make sure that we have the ability to set up temporary shelters, sheltering systems. We want to make sure we have the call out for requests for additional sheltering organizations to come in and help.
The declaration gives the city the ability to do just that, to make sure the migrants are safe. Former President Trump could face criminal charges for his role in the January 6th insurrection. He responded on his Truth social media platform, "They're going after me because they're really going after you."
After gathering mountains of footage and conducting more than 1,000 interviews, the House January 6th committee is preparing to issue its final report on the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The committee must finish its work because it will be dissolved when the new Republican control Old House is seated in January.
CBS's Bradley Blackburn tells us the committee's referral has no legal weight, but it could put political pressure on the Justice Department to formally pursue charges. So who will win today's World Cup final? France is hoping to reclaim the title for the second year in a row, while Argentinian fans say,
"For many people, it will be a dream come true."
The match begins in less than 2 hours. A big carbon deal for the EU. BBC correspondent Emily Thomas.
Under a provisional agreement, emissions trading will be extended to heating and road transport and will also cover shipping. The Czech Environment Minister, Marian Jurečka, said the deal would allow the EU to meet its climate objectives while supporting vulnerable citizens and small businesses.
Haven't finished your holiday shopping yet? Well, you could get a good deal today, says CBS's Tom Foti.
Super Saturday, the day of big pre-holiday shopping, is over, and retailers are apparently starting to discount on sold merchandise.
Consumers definitely becoming more cautious. People are more cash and credit constrained than any time in the last 20 years.
Retail analyst Bert Flickinger of the National Retail Federation is expecting more than 158 million consumers shopping this weekend, either in store or online.
Hanukkah begins at sundown today. Our Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem.
For 8 nights, Jews around the world will light the menorah, adding a candle each night with special prayers and songs. They will eat foods fried in oil to commemorate the traditional miracle of the oil in the temple. In Israel, the oil-rich food of choice is sufganiyot, or donuts that can have elaborate fillings and toppings.
Potato latkes are also fried up. The shredded potato and sometimes onion cake is crispy on the outside and soft on the inside and is served with either applesauce or sour cream. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Attention all business owners who rent or lease space, including storage space. Stop wasting your money paying someone else for your space. You can now save a ton of money and own your own building with the incredible end-of-the-year sale prices from General Steel. That's right, start saving money every month on renting space from others. Just call 888-74-STEEL to see how General Steel can help you save money. Our 50-year structural warranty buildings are custom designed for your needs and save you a ton of money. Call 888-74-STEEL.
Take it from a successful entrepreneur. If you need to expand or start a new business, you need General Steel.
Great team and the competitive pricing is the reason I went with General Steel.
Call 888-74-STEEL now, and you can get any of our popular quick construction structures, including a 40 by 60 foot building or a 50 by 100 clear span building at end of the year savings. Call 888-74-STEEL. That's 888-747-8335. 888-74-STEEL. For Steel.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably. Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected today, with daytime highs approaching 17. Westerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, lows around zero. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow, chance of snow showers, high temperatures reach up to 21. 1 to 2 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 15.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
There's no announcement of when the special election will be for this, which needs to come down from Governor Tony Evers. Who knows? Maybe Tony will be a little petty off of all of those appointments that the legislature is sitting on.
Previous appointees can sit on those boards years past their expiration date, like a bad carton of cottage cheese.
That, James.
Okay.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin, I hope you have four-wheel drive on your car, because this morning was a reminder that I should probably get new tires.
Uh-oh.
But I'm here, and I'm safe, and I drove very slowly, Mom, and I am fine, and that we will hope that by the time this show ends, more of the streets of Waukesha have been plowed, because it was a little precarious getting to the studio this morning. How'd you fare, Jane Mednar?
It was not snowing when I left, because I get in a little bit earlier than you do. But when it started about 8:30, quarter to nine, it was really coming down.
Those snowflakes look a little bit. For a time there, the snowflakes felt like they were as big as my hand.
Yeah,
they were massive.
Slapping you.
And so, but we're here. We're here safely. It's Friday. I saw an incredible show last night I'm going to talk about
did
later.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, it was date night. That's right.
It was date night. And so we're going to talk about that today. But Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, Oshkosh, Amory, Richland Center, obviously Waukesha, everyone streaming, everyone listening to the podcast later. Happy Friday. Jane Mednar, happy Friday. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic. As much of a pain as the snow is.
It's pretty.
It is pretty. And I'm anxious to see how my Christmas lights are going to look tonight.
Oh, yeah. I agree. It is. Looking out into our Wisconsin Avenue window, out through, I should say, it is very pretty out.
It is.
And this is the month where snow is fun, but check back in February. We're all ready for it to be over.
Everyone will be sick of it.
So we have a very good show today. I'm super excited. At 11:30, so in a half hour, Jim Santel is going to be here, former prosecutor, former civil litigator, and also host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays. So he's going to break down. You've probably heard something about this Harper v. Moore Supreme Court case that had a hearing this week, and how it's the end of our democracy. He's going to explain if that's actually the case and kind of talk through what happened during the hearing.
It's important.
It's super important. It's boring. As far as if you don't speak legalese, you're like, what? But it is very important. And it sounds like it's not as how the hearings went are not as devastating.
Not as dire.
Yes. So he will break that down for us. Then at 12, we're going to do more headlines of the day. And then at 12:30, Matthew Rothschild, also friend of the civic media, who's the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, is going to be here. Because I'm super interested as far as how did the nonpartisan Wisconsin Supreme Court get so partisan? Was it always like this? Was there an influx of money from certain groups at one point that changed the tide of how we elect our Wisconsin Supreme Court justices? So he's going to be here to talk more about how the history of that. And then speaking of history, at 1 o'clock, Russ Sari and Eric Sturgeon from the podcast Wisconsin Drunken History are going to be in studio. And they have a super fun podcast. They have over 100 episodes that they've done that is exactly what it sounds like. It's two good friends drinking, talking about Wisconsin history and fun stories. I think their most recent one, if you want to check it out, is the history of frozen custard in Wisconsin.
Fantastic.
And so they're going to be here for the last hour, and we'll see if they actually bring something for us to imbibe on.
Oh,
that would be on brand if they did that.
But
we will see. I can't do too much because if the snow is still there, do not drink and drive. As always, you can join the conversation 844-967-2789. We love hearing from you. We love getting texts. We love getting calls. And maybe some of you will have opinions and thoughts on this first story of the day. So on Wednesday of this week, Greg Bach, hump day, Wednesday. Greg predicted, because this was the day after Raphael Warnock had won in Georgia, and his prediction was that Joe Manchin was going to switch to being a Republican. That was on his bingo card.
Right.
But for those who are regularly check the news in the morning, I've been trying to not sleep with my phone next to me so I don't check the news and social media first thing in the morning. I'm like 50-50 since I've set that goal for myself. And this morning was one of the nights that I did fall asleep with the phone next to me and woke up, checked my phone, checked notifications. And actually, not Joe Manchin, but Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema has announced she's leaving the Democratic Party.
Gee, shocker.
And one of my more risque jokes. You know, we already knew that she swung both ways. So,
ooh,
ta-da-da.
Nice.
That is a joke because she's also an openly bisexual woman. But she is becoming an independent. She is not joining the Republican Party. But she has announced because I don't know. She needs attention.
She wants money.
Yeah, I think that's what it has to come down to, right? Because she basically, her announcement, she gave an interview, she wrote an op-ed piece for the Arizona Republic, and she said, "I've joined the growing number of Arizonans who reject party politics by declaring my independence from the broken partisan system in Washington." But then she also maintained that she doesn't really plan on changing her voting habits because she was already, along with Joe Manchin, someone who usually took convincing to get on board with the Democratic agenda. But she often aligns with them. But, you know, it seems like this could potentially be, I guess, why now? You know, I think it's like, would she have done this had Raphael Warnock not won? Is this specifically to highlight even more that she is an independent thinker, despite the fact that she was already considered, you know, one of the on the fence Democrats? Is it just because she needs attention?
I don't know that it's about attention. I think her chances of getting real, she would probably have gotten primaried.
I think she's definitely, I think she was always going to get primaried.
Right.
Go ahead.
And nobody likes her.
Yeah, so that was the thing. Democrats don't like her. She's not electable as a Republican. And so I don't know if this is her way of getting out of having to be primaried by not running as a Democrat in 2024. But it sounds like the more you actually look into her, her base is not independents or Democrats of Arizona, it's big pharma and private equity.
Yeah, basically.
And that it's you know, get paid while you can, potentially, before you get voted out in 2 years. And I don't know. It just feels like, at least it's a good talk. It was a good topic to start the day with. But it's like, does this really change anything? I don't think so.
Well, what I find interesting, Open Secrets from 2018 said her estimated net worth was $32,000.
Now, what?
Yes. OpenSecrets.com. This is from 2018. Her net worth was $32,500. Now her net worth is $11 million. So it's been a lucrative career path for her.
I mean, it always is, right? Like the trajectory of almost everyone who's in Congress is how much more wealth they have by the time. What was Ron Johnson's quote? Like he could have made a pat on the back because he didn't make as much money in Congress as other people have.
He could have made twice as much.
How do they? This is where I don't. How do they do it? Like, what is the pipeline of their net worth? I mean, $32,000 to $11 million? How does that even happen?
Well, you give five really, really well-paid speeches to Big Pharma and to whoever you're beholden to.
So that's what it is. It's like appearances?
I'm guessing. I don't know.
Ultimately, your actual campaign money, and maybe this is a question that if we pivot with Matthew Rothschild, because that's what Wisconsin Democracy Campaign looks at, largely mostly in Wisconsin, but it follows the money. And understanding more of, it's one thing of how much money we constantly talk about is in the campaigns, but ultimately that's money that's in the campaigns that then gets spent on advertising, so right. It ends up in the pockets of media companies, whether that's the radio, TV, print, YouTube, etc. But as far as like, what is the loopholes that it's legal for so many of these senators and congresspeople to get rich? I mean, we obviously know, we talk about Nancy Pelosi and how much money she's made from the stock market, because we have people voting on laws and that affects the market. And maybe you become a lot better at predicting where the market's going to go when you're actually knowing what laws are getting
decided on. That seems like that would be handy information.
Kyrsten Sinema setting herself up for something. I mean, she clearly is setting herself up that if and when she does not get reelected, whether as a Democrat or an independent, I mean, it certainly now feels pretty nail in the coffin. She will not be running as a Democrat in 2 years. Is she just setting herself up to be a lobbyist?
Hey, why not? I mean, again, if this is accurate, that she went from $32.5 net worth in 2018 to $11 million in 2022, another two more years, she can double that. She can beat Ron Johnson and walk away with $22 million in the bank.
Gosh, it is. Twitter's a fire, that's for sure. As far as this feels like such a confusing mood. But I also ultimately don't know if it really makes a difference in voting. Maybe it will. I guess it depends. She's just gone rogue, and so who knows? But
has she done anything for her constituents? For Arizona?
I would have to learn. I would have to look more into that in the 4 years that she's been there. But yeah, if you have thoughts, we'll take them. We're going to spend another segment on this, 844-967-2789. And we'll also I'll give you a little preview of what I saw last night and how happy it made me. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is holding what may be its final hearing Monday, December 19th, starting at noon. Listen for special live coverage on your local civic media radio station, then join the conversation as your favorite hosts talk about the hearing, the final report, and what it all means to you. It's insight you won't find anywhere else. Tune in on Monday, December 19th at noon to your local civic media radio station, also streaming on the Civic Media app.
From the lights on the tree in your house to the rotary lights in the park, may this holiday season be a bright, cheerful time for you and your family. Happy holidays from the staff and residents at Edgewater Haven Nursing Home, a proud sponsor of Holiday for Seniors.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Everyone is entitled to a free credit report from each of the three main credit bureaus once every 12 months. Yet only one in three Wisconsin adults actually obtain the report each year. An easy way to remember to check your report is to simply mark your calendar. Picking dates like February 2nd or 2-2 make it even easier to remember. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and don't forget to keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. Help Smile Train change the world one smile at a time. Learn more at smiletrain.org/learn.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. We are going to do one more segment, and then Jim Santel is going to be here, and we're going to dive into the Harper v. Moore hearings that happened at the Supreme Court on Wednesday. I was holding off to talk about that topic until we had someone who is a lawyer. Because as far as Jade and I are concerned, I think we could read things and then be like, what does that mean?
Exactly. Some other terminology is just, yeah. So he can cut our information into digestible pieces.
Exactly. And then later in the show at 12:30, we're going to talk to Matthew Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about more of the historical aspects of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and when this nonpartisan objective position became so, no one's even hiding it.
No.
Like, it's like, I was reading a thread from the Wisconsin Democrats on the importance of the race, and it's like, no one even pretends to think that this is nonpartisan anymore.
No,
which is,
it's about taking control of the ideology on the court.
Which is also so, it's so different because of the fact that, you know, it's one thing for these nonpartisan roles when it's mayors or school boards and stuff like that. Like, obviously people are not void of their own political ideology when they come to any position.
Sure.
But ultimately with judges, it's like you're supposed to be looking at the law. And so there is actually something to base beyond your own ideology of what, how you rule. And yet when you have lobbying firms and interested parties funding your races, that maybe influences how you rule.
Well, these lobbyists and corporations are looking for a return on their investment.
Yes, that is certainly true. So we're going to talk about that later. And then at the end of the show at 1 o'clock, we're talking to the hosts of the Wisconsin Drunken History Podcast.
I have some very special music picked for them.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
I do.
But we were just throwing out kind of the big story of the day this morning. It'll probably move on quickly through the news cycle, but that Kyrsten Sinema has announced that she's not really switching parties. She's leaving the Democratic Party and deciding that she is now going to be a independent. Mm. And she still plans to caucus with the Democrats. So she's still giving the Democrats an edge on committee seats. And TBD if she is going to detach herself more than there are two other technically independent senators. Bernie Sanders from Vermont is independent, and Agnes King from Maine are also independent. And so I don't know how much this actually changes anything. I think, at least in my opinion, it just makes her look kind of like she needs attention. That's kind of my big takeaway of like, why not just keep voting the way that you were voting? Like, why make a whole announcement about it? Because I don't think it's going to save her for a re-election cycle.
Well, you make a good point, too, because certainly when she and Manchin were the two Democrats that they had to appease in order to get things done, and now with Warnock's election, she is less important and critical. And so maybe you're right. Maybe it is just an attention getter going, I'm still here. Na, na, na.
Now you really have to work for my for me to get on board.
Yes.
Because I am technically now an independent.
Right. And I is she going to be a vote splitter? Between, you know, for Democratic voters and independent voters?
I don't know. I mean, and it'd be interesting. I know, obviously, because this is... As goes Wisconsin, I know less about the electorate in Arizona. Obviously, it is also a swing state. There's probably some people, I don't know, maybe there are some people who are celebrating this, but ultimately it feels like something that if you were elected into one party, shouldn't you have to serve your term in that party?
That would be a good rule.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
As long, and obviously, like, I think I've been pretty honest as far as my frustration with a two-party system and how it doesn't allow for the gray area of how a lot of people feel on all the different issues in front of us, mm-hmm. and that a great majority of people are not all conservative or all left in that when it comes to crime, healthcare, the environment, spending policy, foreign policy.
Like lots of
people,
things.
People can have varying different opinions that each party represents instead of these big SWAT, like sweeping, you're either this or you're that.
Right.
You have to vote either this way or that way. And so I get the sentiment as far as more, you know, trying to appeal to people who are more frustrated with, I think her quote was, the broken political system. But I also feel like, you know, if you get elected as something, shouldn't you have to at least stay in that party or kind of what you, I mean, like in, I mean, 6-year terms or it's a long time.
Yeah,
so I understand that things change, but shouldn't you have to at least be like, well, this was the pretenses you elected me under. So for now, I should probably continue to be that, play that role.
You know, there are numerous laws or rules, I think, that should affect members of Congress and yet don't. Like stocks and, you know, insider trading information and kind of stuff like that.
There's so many things to be frustrated about, but all we can do is talk about it. All you and I can do, Jane, is talk about it on the air, try to explain it and give our opinion. And that's more than a lot of people can do.
Absolutely.
So
we're fortunate.
We are not taking that for granted. All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour. But if you have questions about the court case that was there was hearings for it in front of the Supreme Court this week, I guess really any of them, because now there's every day there's court hearings in front of the Supreme Court. But the one that we're going to definitely focus on for most of the next half hour is Harper v. Moore, the court case about independent state legislature theory and what that means. So if you have any questions for Jim Santel, 844-967-2789, he will be joining us right after the break. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers.
I can taste the melody inside your lips, so sweet, so tender, and I know I'm Mr. Still inside.
Linda and the Zeros.
It's too hot.
Groove Machine.
Who's there, the Spice Girls? Muy caliente. Oh, they're not hitting.
Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You could write him a text or knit him a sweater. If you can't be together, you could write him a letter.
Whatever gets you talking. Whatever gets you talking.
Good chat on the game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch. However you do it, you gotta ask a friend. And if they don't share, you can ask again.
Whatever gets you talking. Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at SeizeTheAwkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies expected today, with daytime highs approaching 17. Westerly winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies, tonight, lows around zero. Cloudy skies expected again, tomorrow, chance of snow showers, high temperatures reach up to 21. 1 to 2 inches of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 15.
She's got Chevy, she's got cream. That's so good, they'll make you scream. I'm in love with the queen of cannoli. She's got ricotta and a cherry. She's the girl I'm gonna marry. I'm in love with the queen of cannoli.
Welcome back to As listen on the Civic Media Network. If you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to the podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com or on Spotify and Apple and Stitcher or wherever you find podcasts. And you can always join the conversation at 844-967-2789. So on Wednesday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments to test the so-called independent state legislature theory in the case Harper v. Moore. And I wanted to wait to talk about this until we had someone who actually understood more fully than Jane and I do, because we are not lawyers. So here to break down and talk through what this case is about and what happened on Wednesday during the hearings is Jim Santel. Welcome to the show.
Kristen, I'm so delighted to be with you. It has been a while since we've had a chance to chat, and I'm just delighted to be with you this morning to chat about this and other things as they come up.
So let me just give your credentials for why Jim is actually credentialed as far as being able to talk about this. He spent 30 years as a criminal prosecutor and civil litigator with the United States Department of Justice, including 6.5 of those as chief federal law enforcement officer for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And he's also, as you heard, Jane's music choice.
Right.
He is also the host of Morning Cannolis Civic Media Network.
Right.
Saturday mornings, 9 to 11.
Right. And we sit around, we talk about civics and other things related to government and law and rule of law in America. So great opportunity, as is this morning, to talk with you about the same topics.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll talk. We'll plug the show more at the end because you're here the whole half hour. So let's just dive into it as far as what is the background of this case?
Sure. So let's begin with the concept itself, which is the interstate. The legislative theory here itself. ISLT, the independent state legislature. It comes from the Constitution of the United States of America. That is that when James Madison and George Mason, other people, put all this together, they said that the times, the place, the conditions, the circumstances of voting will be established by the legislatures, by the state legislatures. If you think about it, that makes sense. When you go to vote these days, it's not that the federal government comes in to run our elections even recently. It's all your state people, right? It's your local clerks, all those kinds of people doing it. And that's the way we've done it for, yes, indeed, 240 years or so. And again, not without some disruption along the way. And the point has always been this, Kristen, as you have articulated this so well. If you've got concerns about those rules and regulations, if you're concerned about the timing, for example, drop boxes or early voting or other things like that, that we in Wisconsin have seen, where do you go to challenge those rules and regulations that are put together by the state legislature? The answer is the courts, right? You run into the courts and you say, judges, there's something going on here. I think it disenfranchises people. It prevents them from voting in a way they otherwise should. And the courts will look at that and say, okay, we'll take a look at the Voting Rights Act. We'll take a look at the Constitution. We'll take a look at your basic right to vote and determine whether or not that's right or wrong. Now, It's the legislative theory itself. The independent state legislative theory says this, that because the Constitution speaks about legislatures, therefore it doesn't talk about courts, and that the founding fathers must have meant, therefore, that only the legislature, not even governors and certainly not courts, have responsibility or authority in this area to decide these matters. It is, to call it fringe, to call it obscure, to call it out there, is probably being kind. I've talked about it as being sort of those folks who believe that JFK is still alive or the moon is hollow. It's that kind of a thing in the legal arena. It has come up from time to time. It's been mentioned from time to time, but always discarded, including by the Supreme Court. And so out of North Carolina, this has now percolated up, and we can talk more about the basis for that. Yeah.
So this is coming from North Carolina, which is arguably as gerrymandered
Absolutely.
As Wisconsin,
Absolutely.
You know, however you want to measure that.
Right.
But this was largely because of their redistricting maps, right?
Precisely, right. So what happens is the North Carolina legislature draws lines just like every other state did. And as a result of that, the North Carolina Supreme Court looks at this and says, you have drawn these lines in a way that disenfranchises people of color. Same thing goes on in Alabama, other places, also cases before the Supreme Court. And so the North Carolina Supreme Court says, go back, legislature, and do better. Do this again. Go back and correct your errors here. And the legislature says, no. on two grounds. One is we didn't inappropriately gerrymander. We have enfranchised everyone, and your allegation, your core allegation is wrong, which, again, courts have decided. People take those positions. But secondarily, and this is why it gets to the Supreme Court, and this is why this matter is so important to talk about, what the legislature then says is under this independent state legislature theory that once again says that courts have no role in this, you, North Carolina Supreme Court, shouldn't be deciding this at all. You've got no jurisdiction. You've got no power. And only we are the ones who make these decisions, not only about the times, places, the circumstances of voting, but about the substance of what we've done. And so the courts are out of business, if you will, when it comes, once again, to federal elections, at least to this point, when it comes to identifying and electing senators and representatives. And again, that sets on its head well over two centuries of law. We've always done it that way. And the concern, as you and I were chatting before, is just that, number one, that the Supreme Court is even looking at this fringe, obscure, out there theory at all. But apparently that we do have, as we determined a little bit on Wednesday and certainly before that, we've got at least four justices who say, yes, this makes some sense. And that should be a source of great concern for all of us. I know it's for you and Jane as well.
And so I think this is kind of the origin of, we just covered what the origin of the case is. Right. But prior to Wednesday,
right,
what was the fee? Because I know you've talked about this a lot in
right,
your show.
Right.
What were the potential, and still are the potential
right,
outcomes of how the Supreme Court could hear this case and what they could rule? And when there's headlines saying this will destroy democracy. Mm-hmm. What does that kind of dystopian
sure,
ruling and
it,
look
right,
like?
Right, and it could be dystopian, as you can well imagine, a theory like this, which is fringe, and it is pretty much out there. You've got different variations on it, and people articulate it in different ways. At its most extreme, it does have the opportunity, does have the chance of bringing to an end all that we've thought about in terms of voting, which is the core of our republic, right? And so one of the consequences, depending again upon how broadly you apply it, is this. We talked about this already when it comes to disagreements about the processes. And here we've had issues about ID, voter ID, right, a few years back, and even more recently about ballot boxes and about early voting, the timing, all that. That, if it goes back to the legislature, the courts are not involved. The very people who make the rules are the ones who are going to re-decide the rules. Probably no real due process at all on that. So that's hugely problematic in terms of process. Let's talk about the ones that are even beyond that. Let us suppose, for example, that when it comes to federal elections, again, a senator, a representative in one of the districts in Wisconsin says, I was the winner when, in fact, I wasn't the winner, just by the pure calculation. Normally, what would happen is, what would you do? What did Donald Trump do 60 different times in the past year or so? He went into court, right?
Yeah.
And yes, 60 courts said, no, Mr. Trump, the numbers don't support your notion. This doctrine would say that you would not have the capacity to, you would not go into court to challenge that. You would not have a dispute, if you will, between the winner and the loser, according to math. Instead, it goes to the legislature, and they would vote on who won. And what does that mean, even as you're shaking your head, as everyone does, furrowing the brow, those kinds of things, Kristen? What that means is, in perpetuity, if someone is in power, a party is in power, here in Wisconsin, it's the Republicans, other states, it's the Democrats, equally concerned out there, what you could do in perpetuity is continue to simply override the voting results, override the results of the elected population out there, and say, you know what, we think, yeah, maybe there was some fraud, and maybe, in fact, Jim did win, and Kristen, who has the numbers, maybe there was some fraud, and really, really Jim won, not Kristen, and as a result of that, we're going to put Jim in the role, in the Senate position, and not Kristen, and basically erasing your vote.
And that would be legal.
And that would be legal under this theory, according to the Constitution, as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court. And what it means, of course, is you think about that. why would I vote then, right? The inhibiting, the deterring factor. Why would I serve as a poll worker to go through that entire exercise if I know that those folks in the legislature, whatever state it is, are going to look at this anyway and say, you know what? Not so much. We don't like the winner. We're going to choose somebody else. And why would I go to vote in the end? And that's the real destruction that you're talking about, Kristen, when it comes to the demise of democracy. There's another aspect of it, even with respect to the Electoral College, too, of course. We know that, again, Electoral College votes are assigned based upon the popular vote in the state. And so that, again, determined if there's a contest by courts. Here, if you've got a legislature that decides, maybe candidate X won, but we think there was fraud, so candidate Y probably won, and we just choose to award the electoral votes in our state to candidate Y, you can do that. And basically, then you change as a result of this, the results of the presidential election through the Electoral College based upon the decisions of those legislators about who won. It is stunning. It is just absolutely cataclysmic. And in the end, it changes not only how we elect people, but frankly, who we elect. And that's the concern about this scary, horrific theory out there, the independent state legislature theory, ISLT.
So to bring it back and not scare everybody as
right,
much,
right,
because
right.
that was a prediction
right.
of what could happen.
Right.
Now on the hearings, I was happening on Wednesday. But everything I saw afterwards is that how the oral argument is making people believe that maybe this is not as dire as far as they don't necessarily have the numbers to totally upend everything.
Right, exactly. And you hit it right on the head, which is, of course, you need four justices to take a case on. And so that in itself, as we said already, is a little concerning
yes.
that they're spending their time saying, let's pluck up this fringe theory. Let's hear this case at all. They have the choice. They do not have to hear everything. They don't hear everything. They could have done that, but they didn't. And so you've got four justices, and we know who they are, who probably indeed are in favor of doing this. And their names are Clarence Thomas and Joseph Alito and Neil Gorsuch and maybe Brett Kavanaugh also. Maybe, okay? So you've got four of them who are out there. And so that means, okay, you need another vote in some direction. We know at the far end, you also have Sonia Sotomayor and you've got Ketanji Brown Jackson. You've got Elena Kagan, who are almost certainly on the so-called liberal side. So three in the other direction. And it appears that also the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, who normally is a conservative, was expressing some significant concerns about this. He wrote back in 2018, 2019, he said, you know, state courts do have roles to play at a time when the Supreme Court said that federal courts will not look at political gerrymandering. He said, yeah, but state courts can still handle that. So arguably, you've got four and four. You've got the three so-called liberals joined by the Chief Justice. And again, not with great particularity, can you ensure how people vote? But again, Kavanaugh and maybe expressing some concern, but he has normally signed on to this as well historically. And so you've got 4-4. And so the question is, who is that? Who's that fifth vote in one direction or another? And it struck me, and I think it struck many other people. Other people may have different assessments of what they're hearing, that her name is Amy Coney Barrett. It's Amy Coney Barrett, appointed by Donald Trump, along with at least two others. And she, along the way, was expressing great, great concern about this and suggesting once again, based upon her questions, that maybe this case shouldn't be here, and that in its extreme forms, and maybe even in its lesser forms, this is not something the Supreme Court should do. And that's what gives us some solace. That helps us sleep tonight, maybe in for the next 6 months or so.
Yes.
Yes.
Because,
right?
I mean, that is the thing. That is the thing. We hear, we dive into these, and then you're like, well, I guess we'll find out next summer.
Right, exactly.
So, Jim Santel will still be here. If you have questions for him, because obviously this is confusing and dense, but it is very important, 844-967-2789. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
So good they'll make you scream. I'm in love with the queen.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst Dick Vitale.
I want to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Join our team in the fight against cancer at V.org.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10:06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10:06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Jim Santel, who is a criminal prosecutor and civil litigator with the United States Department of Justice, and also the host of Morning Cannolis. So if you want to hear more about what we're talking about today, I'm sure you're going to be talking about it on Saturday, tomorrow.
We will. Join the nine people listening in on Saturday morning, and we always love to have your phone calls there as well. So great.
And so what we are talking about is kind of breaking down what happened on Wednesday for the oral arguments with Harper v. Moore, the case about the independent state legislature theory.
Right.
And from what I know, this is wildly unpopular.
It is wildly unpopular, not only among people of reason, of all parties, too. And I think that's your point earlier on, right? Republicans and Democrats, the Green Party, independents, everybody out there should be very concerned about this. And again, the rational, if you will, the normal people who are looking at this are all across the board, political people on all sides, conservative and liberal commentators, in the academic world as well, the legal world. So many articles out there. Just type in the theory and you will see all kinds of things being written about this historically. 95% of them, maybe 90% of them say, no, this
Please
can't
don't
be
do this.
Fun to talk about, fun to engage in, maybe some discussion, but this should not be something that we seriously embrace. And more importantly, it came up in the oral argument. Also, Neil Katyal, who was representing one of the three lawyers there, also talked about the history and said, this is not looking to history, what our founding fathers intended by that. And frankly, even this notion that it's just the legislature. They were commenting about the legislature in a more broad sense, the people who make the laws, and that includes a governor usually, right, and other people involved in that. And so this notion that somehow it's this very discrete body, that wasn't what they were thinking at all, and they would be horrified. The people who created Article 3 in the Constitution, all about judges, they would be horrified to think that somehow courts should not be involved in deciding these kinds of things. That, too, as what they wrote in the Federalist Papers, other things along the way, there's no historical predicate for this. And, again, everybody who has really looked at this with some sense of balance, maybe, and that's a critical thing about at least four members of our Supreme Court, has rejected it and said, no, it can't be right.
So, Jim, whose wish list is this on? Is this
right?
Because I keep thinking of Leonard Leo, who's the Federalist Society, but his whole thing is appointing judges that are handpicked by the Federalist Society, and doing this kind of knocks out his toys.
Right, it certainly does. And that's why it's also very interesting, right, for that very reason. To the extent that you feel that you want to go to the courts and fill the courts with people who are of your same mind, eliminating them from this process seems to be counterintuitive. And so where it comes from, Jane, is just this. You've talked on this program and other settings, frankly, about those folks who were advocating for the overthrow of the 2020 election, right? And those folks who put together memorandums, for example, that described how if we go to state legislatures, we will have an opportunity there for them. Petition them. Let's go back to Georgia. Tell the Georgia legislature that it needs to rethink the electoral votes coming out of the state of Georgia. That kind of a fellow named John Eastman, whose name I know you know well, authored this memorandum that had this multi-purpose focus to it. That was one of them. Let's go to the legislatures and have them redo what the popular vote would otherwise indicate and send them then to Mike Pence on January 6th. So this is where it really comes from. It's an offshoot of that. It plainly has other aspects to it. It has been out there and it's been percolating up a little bit, but really seized upon by many people. I will tell you as well that Ginny Thomas, the spouse of one of those people who's going to decide this case, Clarence Thomas, was also advocating for it. And she was one of those people who said, Jane and Kristen, that this is something the Supreme Court should not only think about, but should give very, very serious thought to and embrace as a way of returning, as they say, the responsibility for this back to the people's houses, which are the legislatures. That, once again, Ms. Thomas, with due respect, is just ridiculous and not founded on any normal legal theory, not history otherwise. But it comes out of the same thing that still animates us, which is the 2020 challenge and that election. We're back there once again.
Ginny Thomas is not a lawyer, right?
She is not. I think that's right.
Randomly go to law school, right, so she's really just come out of. We should do this because of all the experience I have of knowing about the law.
Right. And again, I will tell you candidly, I often tell people you don't have to go to law school to understand these things at all, but you do have to have some sense of reason and rationality. Yeah. And I think Ms. Thomas and others out there, including people who are advocating on behalf of the North Carolina legislature, have got this all wrong. And again, a lot of the commentary for Wednesday was just that. People talk about them being embarrassed by questions from both the left and the right. Again, Amy Coney Barrett, again, John Roberts, likewise, indicating that this is not something that is normal. And even though it's out there, this needs to be put to bed. And we hope that come June, as we've said, that this does get put to bed completely. One of the other concerns, Kristen and Jane, still out there is, you know, there are variations on this, too. You could go whole hog. You could do something less than that. And the concern is still, even with Amy Coney Barrett being very skeptical about this, what if John Roberts, who tries to be the conciliator, right, on all these things, even in the Dobbs case, he was trying to find this middle ground, which there plainly was not in the end. He may be trying to look for some way of saying, okay, we can adopt some portion of this. Maybe courts have some role, but not complete. Maybe the federal courts should be involved in this in some way. And that, too, is going to be problematic because one of the other concerns about this is you could very well get different rules, get this for federal elections and state elections. And, you know, in Wisconsin here, as in other states, we always vote. You vote for school board. You vote for a county board of supervisors. You vote for your state senators and your federal representatives all on one ballot. Could you imagine if we had different kinds of rules and regulations for those, the mess that this would cause? The League of Women Voters wrote this wonderful brief, this amicus brief, saying just that. Putting aside the crazy, which is a word that they would not use, I would. They said, what do you do with all these different votes then that comes in, all these different processes? That's also a part of this. And again, if John Roberts, bless him for trying to find some middle ground. Hopefully what he does is he solidifies his view. He brings Amy Coney Barrett, maybe Brett Kavanaugh, and we get somewhere at least a 5-4 decision shutting this down completely. I'm hopeful still that that will happen and there won't be some sort of middle gray area where they say, yeah, we're just going to change this a bit. Because the other concern is that then it opens the door to the next case, right?
Yep.
This is about federal elections. What about state elections then? If this makes some sense there and opens up all kinds of other possibilities, as we all know, when Supreme Courts say things, people seize on the language and they say, well, it was good here and maybe it should be good over here. And that's the concern down the road as well.
All right. Well, this flew by, so we're going to have you back because we didn't get to talk about the other hearings that are happening because there's a lot. There's a full docket.
It is a full docket. A full docket.
Somewhat scary, terrifying cases that the Supreme Court is hearing. So we'll have to have you back to explain it to us.
I would be delighted to. Anytime,
Jim Santel,
Kristen.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here, and we'll talk with you again and your listeners and Jane very, very soon.
Absolutely. You can hear him tomorrow at 9 a.m. right here on the Civic Media Network for Morning Cannolis. He is Jim Santel. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be right back.
He's probably cooler than me. Sleeps right where I used to sleep, right by a door.
And in the... Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us.
We go through safety training and try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.